Hey there, Rocky Mountain Pro faithful. This is Senior Referee Dewey Larson, and you're listening to RMP Radio, where pro wrestling is elevated.
RMP Radio is back on the air. Hi, I am your host, Mr. Fourth Row, and joining me, if you guys haven't figured out yet, we're getting to meet all the dudes, and the next dude on the list, I've got the resident masshole, Marky Pins. Marky, how you doing?
Not too bad, Mr. Fourth Row. How you doing? I am the resident and your local lovable masshole, no matter where I go. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing just fine. I'm excited to, like I said, go one-on-one with all the dudes from the Dudes and Belts chatcast. But first question I got for you out of the shoot. How did you get introduced into this wacky world of professional wrestling?
Oh, my goodness. So I'm sure, just like all the other fellas said, I've been a wrestling guy ever since I was a little kid. Always loved it. Got the wrestling figures, the Hulk Hogan's, the Junkyard Dogs, Macho Man, all that stuff when we were a kid. Had a little ring. But it was really weird. In my house, my mother would let me watch it, and she had no problem with it because it was, you know, just on TV. My father absolutely hated wrestling. Told me not to watch it. My buddies that lived upstairs, I grew up in an apartment building, and my friend upstairs had one of them little black boxes on the cable box. Remember those things?
Yeah.
And every time there was a pay-per-view, we always would go up to my buddy's house, but my mother would say, "Don't tell your father." And I don't know, that made me just want to do it more, I guess, you know, being a young 7-8-year-old kid, like, whatever, I'm not going to listen to dad. I'm going to do what I want. And I'm watching wrestling and stuff. And I just always enjoyed it. Me and the guys would, you know, try to get to, as we got a little older, when WWE would come to, or WWF back then, would come to the old Boston Garden, we'd try to get tickets and go to, like, the house shows and stuff. But it was always something that we talked about in school, at the bowling alley. Everywhere that we all went, it was like, oh my God, did you see that match? Did you see Million Dollar Man? Did you see Hogan? So it's just been in my life, my whole life. And then coupled with the dudes, once we got together and decided to do this chat cast, we knew it had to be about wrestling. It was Johnny Deathdrop's idea, but we got all of us together that had been just doing nothing but talking wrestling for years. And it just seemed like a natural fit.
Right. Yeah. To just, why not put that, creative juices and share it with the world.
I mean, we were already doing it anyway amongst each other, either at the lanes or somewhere else. We're hanging at pizza place or something. So, let's record ourselves doing it. Why not? Right.
Yeah. So true. So I've already got the story from, as of right now, two of the other dudes at the time of this recording, one's in the can, not uploaded yet, but, what's your story about, how you met the rest of the dudes?
So we've all been friends a long time. I'd have to say myself and the Sunday Night Savior have been friends the longest. We've known each other. We grew up in the same city, Somerville, Massachusetts, just outside Boston. But we've known each other since, God, I think like the fourth grade. His sister was in all my classes growing up to elementary school. Sunday's a year or two younger than me. But we always hung out together. We'd go play like stickball and stuff after school and things. And so Sunday and I, you know, in through bowling and stuff, we knew each other. Our dads were actually best friends when they were kids. We didn't know that until much later. But with Johnny Deathdrop and the Coastal Crusader and Triple I, we are all professional candlepin bowlers back this way, believe it or not. Johnny Deathdrop, not so much anymore because he takes on a lot of responsibility with the show. But all the other four of us are still actively competitors on the professional bowling circuit back this way. So we've all been friends for 10 to 15 years through bowling, but we would all kind of, there's also this little subculture of like wrestling fans, right? That is in almost any, I'm sure, group of like, you know, social friends or activities and such. And we all got together and we all just realized we all love this thing. and it's fun. While we're all warming up for our bowling league matches and stuff, we'll play entrance musics on the jukebox, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, John Cena and stuff. So really, when you think about it, we're all still like 11 years old, to be completely honest with you, man.
Yeah, and in a bowling alley environment, I mean, it's fun. It's something that kind of fits in.
It really does. It really does. I'm not going to say like an obscure sport, but they're like not the mainstream sports. When somebody says, think of some sports, it's baseball, basketball, football. But there's also elite professionals and everything. You know, us, it happens to be bowling.
Yeah.
With all the guys that work inside the ring, it's professional wrestling. Either way, whatever you're doing, you're going out and doing it at the absolute highest level possible.
Yeah, so true. Well, and then too, amateur sports team, we play a lot of alternative sports too. We got a couple dodgeball league championships under our belt.
That you are on a dodgeball league. That is so cool.
We got a couple wiffle ball championships under our
belt.
That's awesome. Never got a kickball because there was a team that like won like 12 years in a row. We just couldn't beat them. All ex-soccer players. That's kind of tough.
So they brought in all the ringers, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of tough because all the leagues of this particular sports league that we played in, they had multiple leagues in the different cities, and then all together at the end of the season, all the city leagues in that particular umbrella league got together. They were in the one of the southern city teams. The leagues, and then we had to play them in the first round sometimes, but they would always win every single year, and it's like retire, leave, please, something, you know.
I know.
Let somebody else.
The rest of us.
Yeah, let somebody else win the golden keg. So that was another two thing too. Is the kickball was the golden keg was the trophy, and the
that's fitting.
The dodgeball one was the golden wrench trophy. So.
Golden Wrench. That's gorgeous.
Yeah, which I do have a picture of myself on my Facebook for people. If you ever want to look at it, it's out. I got pictures out there.
You can dodge a wrench. You can dodge a ball.
Exactly.
That's amazing. But it's cool. Like, instead of just being like playing like a mainstream sport, when you do one of these like off the beaten path type sports, you get people like interested and they're like, wow, there really is a professional. Well, tell me a little about that. And you kind of let them know that, like, hey, these weren't just games that, like, we played in school or when we were younger. There is all of this adult. Like, most people think, oh, there's only, like, you know, maybe softball or something like that as you get older. But there are leagues or competitive or even just fun in all these different levels of – I'm sorry, different types of games. I'm not going to call them obscure games because they're not, but just kind of off the beaten path type activities like that.
Right, yeah, and the league that I play volleyball in, they had a couple sessions of dodgeball that they did, and our league, believe it or not, listeners, was at the time, it was still the Rack House, now known as Bierstadt Lagerhaus, and that was crazy to play, and it's like, I watch wrestling here, I do what I do with Rocky Mountain Pro here, and, you know, to hear the balls bounce off the back walk-in cooler and off the the roll-up doors that they have there at Bierstadt, it's crazy. It's like, you know, and well, and two, I've also played in leagues. We played at the Pepsi Center, now the Ball Arena, and hearing those dodgeballs bounce off the glass for the lacrosse game, it's an interesting noise, an interesting environment to hear everything happening.
When you're sitting in like a 20,000 seat arena, everything kind of seems a little more exaggerated and big like that. You're in such a setting like that. That must have been a really cool place to play your games.
Oh, it was. Yeah. The only thing was that after the first year that we played, I learned that you do not want to dive on that field because you get carpet burned like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, is it like straight like AstroTurf? Like
it is.
The old school AstroTurf? Oh, that stuff hurt. We used to play baseball on that
local
baseball diamond where I grew up. They put that on it, and it was just the worst. It's the worst.
Yeah, it just was tough. So you just kind of learned the second, third, fourth year that we had the big get-together tournament thing that we had there that you just don't dive, or if you want to dive, you do it kind of deliberately. Make sure you roll, don't slide, you know, that kind of stuff. So
or buy some really good knee and elbow pads.
Yeah, that too. So true. You know, and so kind of getting back to your doing with the candlepin bowling.
Yes.
I just, you know, talked to the episode before this, I talked to Triple I, and yep. he talked about that, and he talked about, so you guys are in a league, but you, it's like a pick me league. You are ranked in the pro league, but you get picked to be on a certain teams. It's kind of like a draft.
No, it's not a draft. So even, you know, no matter what sport you play, there's always like different levels of competitive nature. And we do compete on the professional level, on the highest level, where there's no handicap to even anything off. Mm-hmm. And our team this past year did extremely well. We were in first place for almost the entire year, but it is all of the best professional candlepin bowlers that exist bowling on five-man teams. It's a 12-team league, so not everybody that is a very good bowler is included. It is a very elite club to be able to be in the league. It is a hand-picked league. Each team has a captain, and every year the captain is looking for, obviously, the best guys to be on his team to make the team as good as possible. There are some teams that subscribe to the policy of, you know, go get the new big thing, whoever the young guy is. But I've been doing this a very long time. I've been a professional for over 20 years. And the best thing I can talk about is how keeping a team together in any league that does well, keeping that team together is far more important because the chemistry develops. And this is for any sport, but for bowling specifically, for what we do, the chemistry of how well five individual personalities work together. Like, look at any wrestling tag team. If you have two guys that don't mesh well, but on paper are dynamite, the tag team's not going to last too long. You know, and it's the same way on a good bowling team. If you have five people who are all like studs, but the egos aren't in check, or somebody thinks they're better, those teams break up rather quickly. I've found being a captain for as long as I have and having a team for as long as I have that the team chemistry is clutch. And right now we have some of the best chemistry in the league. Triple I, you know, you guys see him on stream. Everybody sees him on stream and he's nuts, right? He's the man. He's just out of control. He's like that in the bowling alley too. That there's no gimmick there. He is Triple I, in every sense of the word. But he's that rallying point, right? That we all kind of get around. He's the guy that breaks the tension, breaks the ice. He is such an important asset to have on a team. I can't even put it into words.
Oh wow!
I really can't. But it is really, really hard to make it to the elite level of anything that you do, and we are extremely fortunate to have made it this far, because I mean, it just takes the years of putting in the work and, you know, learning. I talk about your person's XP bar on Dudes and Belts all the time. And it's a real fact how much you fill your XP bar. You can go out and just throw the good ball all the time and think that you're a god, but until you've learned all the little basics of a game, you're never really truly a professional. And I have four other true professionals on my team that do very well, and the chemistry meshes very well, and the team wouldn't be the same without Triple I. It really wouldn't.
Yeah, you know, and I would like to piggyback kind of what you said, because I captain a volleyball team as of recording right next week. We're in our playoffs right now, but we got seeded too, so we have a bye this particular week.
Oh,
and,
excellent.
And the chemistry thing on a volleyball team is also very important, because there's sometimes those things where you're not going to vocally call a play. Instead, you just automatically have that sixth sense, because you guys have been playing together for so long that you already know what everybody's going to do.
That's the best way you put it. It really is like a sixth sense that you already kind of get to know these guys, and you know what's coming. You understand how people are going to deal with it. It's just something that's like unsaid, unspoken, but you know. That's that intangible chemistry element on a very good team. It really is. It's what separates really good teams from teams that are on the way,
right?
I think.
Yeah, and the people that haven't been, you know, playing for too long, or haven't been playing together for too long, because you're still trying to figure all that out.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's a long process. It takes a while to do it, but eventually, when you have that tight knit group, that it all, like, all the puzzle pieces just fit, that's when you know you're off to the races. You're off to something good.
Yeah. And what's also good too about, you know, if I could kudos my own team that I've got going on right now.
Go right ahead. It's your show, bro.
Is that, my team that I have currently now is, I met one of the people that, two of the people that are on the team right now through the league, you know, participating and kind of gotten to know, became friends. So they're on the team. the couple that I played with them years and years ago in another league. And then another person is somebody I graduated high school with. She played, I played tennis in high school, varsity at all 4 years. But my sister also played tennis as well in high school. So my sister is 2 years younger than me. But the person that is also on my volleyball team, she also played tennis with my sister. So I also kind of knew her with my sister just because of also the tennis connection at the high school. So we're kind of a mix and match. But I also feel because everybody has a little bit common in with the captain, unfortunately or unfortunately me, it kind of helped us make that synergy, getting the team together and ramping us up and getting that sixth sense, the acclimation a lot quicker because, we had, when we first started, it took a little while to get all that and get in sync and things of that nature. But now that we've kind of got the little bit of bits and pieces together, it's helped tremendously, and I think that's always why we're kind of ranked, first or second in the leagues that we've always participated in. And it's not necessarily for the glory, it's about the fun, but it's not bad having a lot of fun at getting a lot of victories under the belt.
I mean,
either.
Let's face it too, it's also pretty fun to win too.
Yeah,
so like you can go out and learn about the game and kind of understand if you're on a team or whatever sport you're playing, that we have a long way to go. Let's enjoy the ride, but let's learn a little bit. But when you also get to a point where your team is comfortable with each other and you kind of have that ability to see what's going to happen and be able to understand what's going on, that sixth sense that we were just talking about, it's going to lead to a few more W's, a few more victories, and you're going to have a little bit more fun if you're winning a little bit more, by far.
And there's times that, I hate to say this, but we're kind of, smashing the other team. So we've gotten to the point, too. It's like, well, let's try some things that we wouldn't normally try. So it's the that cliche that's out there, F around and find out.
Right.
Right. So sometimes we do, I'll admit it, that we do that when we have those things, because it's, hey, let's try some things that we don't normally try, and though, so that if we ever do get into that point, we're ready for it.
Just make sure that you're up about 10 or 12 points before you start, flapping around and finding out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So true. Kind of doing a little of a hard transition from there. What was it like getting those first steps and doing the chat cast with Johnny and the rest of the dudes? How'd it go for you, those first ones, and those first steps?
My God, the first chat cast that we did. So I remember, I will never forget this. It was back in December of 2019, right before the world was changed with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. John had reached out to me and had mentioned that he wanted to start doing a Twitch stream about wrestling and stuff. And I thought it was awesome. John and I have never been one to shy away from cameras or things like that. And I thought it was a very cool idea. Like I said, it's something that we had already all talked about and joshed around with each other every single time we saw each other anyway. So let's do it on camera. He reached out to me and asked because I had already done a lot of video editing and YouTubing and stuff like that. So I already had a little bit of a head start when it came to that aspect from what John knew. So we kind of worked together learning how to do the live streaming thing together. Mm. And we both learned it was very different. I thought it was going to be very similar to how one would do YouTube. And I found out real quick that it's not. but we learned together about how live streaming is different from video editing and then uploading later. But we were really rough, I'll say this, behind the edges in the beginning. It was just he and I sitting in his apartment, in his room on a futon, sliding a microphone back and forth to each other. But the conversation was still good.
Yeah.
Even the in the early days, the few people that we had watching us, we still had an engaged chat. Because we always figured you have to engage a chat. They're going to ask questions. They're going to want to know your opinions. Obviously, they're watching you. So we kind of put an emphasis on that very early to make sure that if anybody asked a question, to just engage them. And it worked well for a long period of time. We started to realize that there was a better way we could do the show. We could add a couple cameras onto it. You put a couple overlays and slowly but surely, we learned how to get better. And we did get better. It looked better. It sounded better. We started adding a few buddies here and there. Sunday Night Savior was the first one that we added after John and I. We even got Lady Death Drop involved in a few shows back in the day. My son Dommy Pins got involved. If you go, I don't even know if the VODs would still be there on Twitch, but if you go way back to like January, February of 2020, you'll see some ridiculousness on the beginnings of the Dudes and Belts Chatcast. But we knew we had something. We were comfortable with each other, and we were comfortable doing what we were doing. Nobody was camera shy about it. Plus, let's be honest, it doesn't matter how many people are watching in the chat. You're still sitting in your room by yourself, right?
Right.
You know, or with your guest or with your buddies. So it's really only a couple of you in the room doing what you do naturally. And it was funny. We had always said, oh, you know, someday it'd be fun. You know, maybe some wrestling company sees us and they dig what we're doing. And we kind of looked and went, yeah, that's going to be so far in the future, because it's really, really hard to gain any traction online because so many people are doing their thing that we just kind of we knew we were never going to get lost in the shuffle. We always had the confidence that we would somehow stand out at some point. And then we brought in Triple I. And that really changed some things, too. Now the dynamic between the four of us was really fun. Then the Coastal Crusader came on last, and it was almost like it was the final piece of the puzzle. There was five of us. We had a host, four panelists, and we didn't suck at this. For as long as we were doing it, we kind of realized that, like, we could do this. And then one random night, I will never forget it, we got a random chat comment by official Rocky Mountain Pro. In our chat, and we went looking and went, that's a real wrestling company. Whoa, wait a minute. Let's continue to not suck, boys. Let's keep going. And the rest is history. I mean, that was, we probably did it on our own without any, I'd say outside influence from anybody. Like when Rocky Mountain came in, we kind of started that venture into what Dudes and Belts was. But we were on our own as the five of us for probably a good 6 months, doing a lot of top 10 lists, which I hope we never do again. We fought constantly on those. But it was good entertainment. It was good television. We would do some watch-alongs here and there, but we weren't a fan of watch-alongs. There's a lot of dead air in watch-alongs.
Yeah.
But we just tried to acclimate into what the people wanted to hear, what the people wanted to watch. And we just kind of went from there, and then a short time after that, we had this guy, Mercury Yaden, as a guest on our show one time, and the rest is history, man. And it's been one hell of a ride.
Yeah.
It really has. I didn't anticipate this would happen for a while, if it ever happened at all, but it happened very quickly for us, all things considered, but I wouldn't change a moment of how we got here. Yeah. I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, little did you know that offhanded foreshadowing comment would catapult you to where you guys are at now.
I mean, I remember seeing it. It was red, the Rocky Mountain Pro, and I don't remember what it was typed, but I remember seeing that and grabbing my phone going, wait, what is Rocky Mountain Pro? Because, I mean, we live here on the East Coast. We live just outside of Boston, pretty much all of us. And it's really difficult to see an indie from Denver 2,000 miles away. We're all indie fans. Like, we go to some local promotions around here. There's a very good one locally, Atlantic Pro Wrestling, Beyond Wrestling, Chaotic Wrestling. There's a lot of good ones around, so it'd be really difficult for us to see. And then we noticed that this is from Denver, Colorado. Okay, wait a minute. Oh, they have a Twitch channel. And we all started watching slowly but surely. And then one night we all came in to do our regular Sunday night show, and we, for about 20 minutes, were just discussing, hey, guys, wait a minute. These guys are for real? Like, a lot for real? You know, it's time for us to step our game up right now, gentlemen. And all five of us did, and at least we think we did. And judging by the responses that we've getting from the Rocky Mountain faithful over this whole, like, basically last year and a half, everybody seems to be digging what we're doing, except a few people. Johnny Casanova doesn't like what we do too much. Damon Ace doesn't like what we do too much. But to be honest, don't care all that much, because we keep doing it every week, two, three times a week. And I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah. And so you guys, you know, got your eye on Rocky Mountain Pro, and the strangest of times, but that's the way the world is right now during the pandemic. And
true.
So you guys were watching the show. Now, did you guys have any clue or any inclination that what you guys were watching, that, you know, Rocky Mountain Pro had already been in existence for, you know, quite a few years, pretty much, you know, at that point, about 9.5 years or so.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, no, we really didn't. So at that time, for me personally, and going into, like, even before John had called and we decided to give this thing a go, I had kind of fallen away from mainstream wrestling, mostly 95% WWE. To me personally, I didn't want to watch it anymore. I just wasn't a fan. I really fell out of it. All my own personal reasons aside, I just didn't resent it. I just didn't go out of my way to watch it anymore. Rocky Mountain Pro, once we found it and saw what was going on, it absolutely reinvigorated me. It felt like grassroots. It felt like these were the people who the stars that we were going to see on mainstream. This is where they came from 5 years ago, mm-hmm. 10 years ago. And this is, and I run a small business, you know, and I appreciate the fact of going from small to big. I appreciate working hard at the grassroots level to make your name that much more valuable later. And watching what everybody's been doing in Rocky Mountain Pro, that's what I see so much of. I see Atiba, I see Bruce Wayne's, I see even Damon Ace and all these guys. They're working so hard. And even this new crop that came out over the last year, year and a half, we talk about David Drake, we talk about Owen Easton, and more recently Kendrick and Killian and Noel. Everybody's working so hard to get there that it's fun watching that progression. Sometimes only watching a finished, like, polished product, after a while it's like, okay, this seems too perfect.
Right.
This seems too scripted. This seems too ready to go. I want to see what it's like when people have to think on their feet really quick. That's why when I wouldn't watch a lot of WWE, we would be going to a lot of local indie stuff, a lot of local promotion stuff where it is much more grassroots. I've always been that way. I love local and supporting those guys that just, they go to work 9 to 5 all day, and then they go and they wrestle for 2 hours that night. Like, that's, I'm a blue collar guy, and I respect the hell out of all that. Rocky Mountain Pro brought that back for me personally. It reinvigorated my love for wrestling, and I haven't been able to put it down since. I really haven't. But finding out later how many years of history was all behind it started getting me interested, and realizing that there was a daily live stream where they would show the rewind, kicking it back to the real old school, and then working their way up through NRW and the Rocky Mountain, having shows at the, seeing old stuff at the quarry, and then seeing what happened during the pandemic at Fast, how you just kind of, and that's what really drew me in, that you, that, and this to me was a huge one, that even as the world shut down and everything changed, I had to find a way personally to keep my business afloat during all this, because I lost a lot of time, as a lot of business owners did.
Yeah.
Finding a way to keep their business alive, to hell with profitable at the moment, just keeping them available and ready for the people. Rocky Mountain Pro did that. I saw what I had to do for a business that only had 2 employees, just my wife and I, that's it. Seeing how many people it takes to put on a Rocky Mountain show, and then still being able to keep that many people involved, keep the action in the ring just as hot, if not better. And then slowly, as the crowd started coming back, the product just kept getting better and better. That told me the level of dedication and respect that is behind that curtain, and that is behind that microphone, behind that monitor. The guy that's hitting the button, the director, the audio guy, all the way down to the guy that's checking tickets at the front door. It takes that much of a joint effort. And that drew me in, like I said, again, that, like, grassroots effort. That means a lot to a lot of people. And maybe until you don't run your own thing, you may not appreciate it. But that was something that really struck me very, very hard. And it's kept me drawn in.
Yeah, you know, and Yaden has said this on, I know, your show, because you guys have asked him, mm-hmm. you know, one word describe Rocky Mountain Pro, and it was stubborn. And that was what you just mentioned.
Yes.
Rocky Mountain Rose Pro was so stubborn, we are not going to let this die just because of the world is being crazy.
Right, like, everything changed, and we all had to kind of figure out, like we talk about on the show as well, when wrestlers come out, not only do you need a plan A, but you also need that B and C or D, even still, just in case somebody already has one step ahead of you. We, as all our business owners, we had to think the same thing. We ran on plan A for so long, and then this happened. We had to go to B, C, D, and E just to make sure that we were going to be available to open back up. And I know a lot of people weren't able to, and a lot of people lost their life business and their life savings. And that is a horrible, horrible situation that I wouldn't envy on anybody. We were very fortunate to not lose the bowling alley during it. And Rocky Mountain was very fortunate to not have lost the promotion and their stars. And that proves the stubbornness. Like, I'm a good Italian boy, man. You ask my wife, I am a stubborn SOB when it comes to things. And you know what? You have to be in this day and age, this dog eat dog world. And then with everything changing back in 2020, the way it did, things are now approaching a much more level of what it was before. I don't like saying the new normal, but we're getting back to normal, which I think is very important as a society and as individuals as well. But Rocky Mountain showed that dedication, and I respected that on like an IRL level, in real life level, aside from the wrestling and the stories and stuff, knowing what it takes to run it, knowing that level of dedication, that there's no way I could walk away from this and just being like, this is getting too tough. No, because that's when it starts getting good. When it starts getting really tough is when it starts getting really good.
Right. Yeah. You're getting punched in the mouth, but how are you going to, you know, react to it? How are you going to come back stronger? How are you going to grow? How are you going to, and I think that's, I think sometimes there's a reason for things happening, when it comes to your life, your experiences, things of that nature. And it's, I think there's a plan. I think there's sometimes kismet that on things, and it's well documented on the parallel of Rocky Mountain Pro. That, I mean, this happened, but you know what? Because of this happened, that forced us to do this.
Exactly.
And this, you know.
It might not have been an avenue you would have gone down before, but now it's an avenue that you have to go down. But the good part about that is, hey, you're in uncharted territory. So now you have a chance to learn how to do something that you've done forever, but in a totally new way. And if you do it right, you might learn something along the line. And a lot of those businesses that were able to survive learned something new. We learned. I mean, look at the world now. Now there's more teleconferencing and video chats than there ever was before. The kids, when they have snow days, they don't have to make that up in June anymore. Now they can do these things online. So not saying it's the best, because trust me, online learning really wasn't. I have two kids and it was rough. But we're finding new ways to adapt and overcome the challenges. And as a business owner, and as a podcaster, we had to find ways, because we used to do our chatcast all in person. Like I said before, we used to drive to John's house, all of us, and we'd sit there until, 2-3 o'clock in the morning some nights in his couch, just doing a podcast. But then we couldn't do it, so we started doing it on Skype originally, like we're doing here tonight. Then we moved over to Discord, and we found a brand new way that we could get quality content to the people, but at the same time, doing it in a way that made sense to us. And that is a very familiar story with what we're watching out of Rocky Mountain Pro and many other businesses and podcasts that have had to adapt and overcome after the pandemic craziness that happened back in March of 2020.
Yeah. And then speaking of that, so you alluded to it, you are a business owner, you own a bowling alley. What's your story with the pandemic? How did it go? What did you do to, you know, keep things going and get back to where you're at now?
Well, see, for us, it was extremely difficult. We have at my lanes. I know a lot of places you go to, they're really big and they offer food and drinks and all that stuff. My place was built in 1946. It's called Riverwalk Lanes. Very old bowling alley. It's only 8 lanes, very small. Here in New England, candlepin bowling is a huge deal. I know everywhere else, it's 10-pin with the big pins and the big ball. In New England, it really didn't catch on that much. So there's a lot of really small, like they would put bowling alleys anywhere they could fit them. Most of them were on the back of a bar. They would build this like cinder block building, no insulation. And they would just stuff bowling lanes in there, and you had to buy a good heater or a good air conditioner, you know? So it was very difficult for us. Luckily, though, we had been having a very good year up until that point. So the bank account was doing well. My wife handles all the accounting because I am terrible at numbers. I'm very good at fixing machines and getting dirty and getting greasy and making sure that the machines work. She is extremely good at the finances. So we're a very good team in that regard. She made sure that the bills were paid. She made sure that things were done. But during that time, I had no other services to offer. So what I did with a buddy of mine is we went in and we actually did a little bit of renovation. I know a lot of people took some time during the pandemic to, like, you know, at their home, build a new deck or remodel that kitchen or something like that. We took the time to put in a new floor. We sanded down a lot of the wood on the bowling lanes and stuff. And we went in and took the time and renovated the old lady, like I like to call her. we gave her a facelift, new coat of paint, some new pins, you know, fixed up the machines and stuff. And the place has been running like a top ever since. I got the bug, man, just sitting at home for so long. I'm like, I can't just sit here for another few months. I know nobody else is going to be at the bowling alley, so I can go there. And I got a hold of one of my other buddies who's already in my close circle as it was anyway. And I asked him if he's sick, and he's like, no, I've been sitting at home. I'm like, hey, you want him to go make some money? Because he was a contractor. He lost his job. So I tried to help a buddy out with that. But then once we opened back up in July, the community around where the bowling alley is in Amesbury, Massachusetts, was amazing, supporting all the local and small businesses. The mask effect was still in. People still had to wear masks, but people came in and patronized the small businesses like crazy. Okay. And they really made sure that we survived and were able to keep going. So I am tremendously indebted to all the people that came in summer and fall of 2020 to help us stay open. It was amazing. The community outpour was fantastic. We wouldn't have survived without it. That and my wife's amazing accounting skills, because I would have blown the whole thing. Just being completely honest.
Wow, that's fantastic to hear and great. And I guess if I ever make it out that way, I got to give the Candlepin Bowling a try.
It's a unique flavor of bowling that people come in from other parts of the world who've never seen it, and they look at this ball that kind of fits in the palm of your hand,
yeah,
and these skinny pins that are like a foot and a half tall, and they're like, ah, oh, this is so easy, I'm going to just start. And then the first like 8 balls go in the gutter every single time. And they look back and they go, what am I doing wrong? I'm like, dude, you think it's easy? It's not. it's very difficult. So it's more of a, I would say, much more of a social game. Like, there is a professional element of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, a higher, like, there are TV shows where the best bowlers can go on. But most of the time, it's really just, like, mixed leagues, men and women, sometimes the kids. And people are just going to have a few beers, have dinner, hang out with their friends. And, oh, yeah, by the way, let's go bowl a little bit. So
yeah,
it's much more of a social setting. The professional and the higher level game, I would honestly say, is only 5% of what the game actually represents here in New England. Most of it is just people coming out and having fun and doing that thing. Most people, because it is so very difficult, most people never make that jump to get to like the professional level. They just have fun doing it how they're doing it. And that's a great thing about most games is that, yeah, there's a level you can reach, but there's also a level where you can just come in with the wife or the kids or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, and just kind of come in, have a couple of drinks, throw some balls. And that was something I always wanted to do after, you know, my wife and I had been bowling together. I met her. She was also a professional bowler. The pins gimmick is not a gimmick in my house. It's a truthful thing.
Yeah.
So meeting her and having both of us being very accomplished candlepin bowlers, we decided that we wanted to open it up and make it into a business, right? Because if they say if you do what you love for work, you really don't work. And I've been running the bowling alley now for 10 years, and I can honestly say it's really not my work. It's more my man cave than anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's more where me and my friends come and we hang out and we talk. And yeah, I do make money. It does bring home money for the family and stuff like that. It pays its own bills. So it is nice. I mean, I'm not in the house, so my wife's happy that she gets a few moments of peace during the week when I'm at the lanes. But
right,
I don't feel like I work. I feel like I just go to my happy place, to be completely honest about it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I can't believe it's been 10 years now. My God. It really has been.
Yeah, and so then Coastal told me that, you know, you can basically, if somebody that's not familiar with candlepins, is you can basically tell them the rules and, you know, that kind of stuff like that, but you can't really necessarily tell them how to bowl, what style to use, because everybody's got their own little style. Is that correct?
It's very correct. What we notice a lot in 10-pin bowling and big ball bowling is everybody tries to throw that nice big curve and curve it into the pocket to get the pins to explode.
Yeah.
In candlepin, the physics of it are absolutely mind-boggling. Like, if Sir Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein ever saw a candlepin bowling alley, they would have just quit physics and motion and all that right away. They would have just quit. There is no one correct way to do it. It's just roll the ball down the middle, hit the head pin, and literally just hope for the best. It's not a game of strikes. It's very much a game of spares, and you get the third ball in candlepin. That's another right. difference. You get three balls. So on that third ball, it's just a matter of trying to get as many extras as you can to not get like a five or a six, to try to get like a nine or a 10 instead of getting that spare. So it's very funny seeing, I don't know if you happen to see it, there was the episode of The Simpsons where they went to a candlepin bowling alley. It was on a few years ago. They modeled the bowling alley on The Simpsons episode after this place that's here in Wakefield, Massachusetts, actually right down the street from where I train at wrestling during the week. And it changed Homer Simpson's life. It was so funny when he found out that you get a third ball to try to make the last pin that you might have missed. Like, he has this epiphany in his life about getting the third ball. I always talk about that because it made me laugh the first time I saw it. But just little differences and variances. Yeah. It's more just like a regional variant of the game of bowling is candlepin. But yeah. it really is its own, like, subculture around here. It really is.
Yeah.
We love it.
Yeah, and when he told me that, I was like, that's very curious, because I told him on the episode that even though I'm right-handed, yep. I didn't tell him this, but I don't throw a curve because I think it's the years and years of playing tennis, and that's just awkward to try to throw a curve, and I don't want to mess up my ground strokes for tennis.
True.
So and I don't know if it's because my dad is left-handed, but I feel like I, even though I'm right-handed, I throw like my bowl like a left-handed person because my footwork is all wrong. I end up, you know, on the back foot, the wrong foot, you know, when I finish. So yeah. I'm very curious if I ever got a chance. Well, actually, when I get a chance, I should actually be a little more positive to give this a try to see how it goes for me. So.
Oh, definitely, man. If you ever make it up there, I swear to God, I'll have you throwing strikes in 10 minutes. Won't be a big deal. Once you learn a couple little basics of it, mm-hmm. it's not – candlepin's not a curveball game.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's okay to just roll it straight. When you get better at it, you know, people can play with the back curve or the over curve with the ball depending on how you do it. Again, there's no right or there's no wrong. There's how you do it. And then what would happen is you would see somebody who's maybe a little better than you. They could give you a little tip. Like, there's no one mentor in the game. You can learn something from absolutely everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's so much fun. It's very different. It's much more of a challenge than regular 10-pin bowling. And those of us that do this game on the regular, we literally are the dictionary definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yeah,
we are out of our minds. Some of us who bowl these professional tournaments, we do them 3-4 times a week. We bowl 3 or 4 nights a week, and we do the same thing over and over again, and we always think it's always going to be better next time. And that's why we keep coming back, because next time it could be better. And I'm sure it's like that for almost every single sport, but reaching the professional level in this one sport that I have, I'm telling you, the gray hairs on my head is not because I'm 40. It's because of all the years of bowling. I'll tell you that much right now. Really is, man.
So swinging the conversation back to Rocky Mountain Pro, and you guys
yes.
started watching in the pandemic. From the time that you guys got your this was a good punt when I had Triple I on, when you guys had your eyes on Rocky Mountain Pro, to like now what we've got going heading into Milestone, which we're going to get to in a little bit here. What have you seen? What have you like marked out for that the change from just then to now?
What really hit me first, because like I said, when we started watching Rocky Mountain Pro and we really started getting involved, it was very much during pandemic times when there couldn't be a crowd there. And they were setting up and doing charge back at Fast Performance. What really hit me hard was when the crowd started coming back and the amount of people that were showing up out of the blue, because we hadn't seen Rocky Mountain really with fans there, and seeing the amount of people that could not wait to get back in the door. and seeing their favorites, because that was the other thing about wrestling, is hearing who the crowd cheer, especially at a new company that you're watching maybe for the first time. You may not know who the good guys are, who the bad guys are. Mm-hmm. You may not know who's kind of like the down the middle. You have no idea just yet. You're going on the commentators. But seeing the fans coming back and the massive amounts of support and out like cheering for people like Atiba and Bruce Wayne's, and it's like, wait, I get this now. And the amount of like shade that they would throw at Dustin Urich and Damon and JK Pop turning, how everybody loved him, and yeah. now they hate him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? and Jumbo being the stud and watching Brew grow into this stud that he is now. That was what really hit me hard in the beginning, was how outpouring the support was. Because like I said, I go to shows around here, but maybe it's because I'm involved in, not involved, but I'm at these shows a lot locally here, that Rocky Mountain Pro was so very new that it was this blank slate of what we were looking at for the first time. And then seeing the fans start coming back slowly. I mean, I think at the beginning they could only let like 10, maybe 15 people in. But those were the loudest 15 people in North America.
Yeah.
You know? So it just, that was an instant. We would be watching the show before we do the podcast. And I remember saying several times, like, what do they have, like 50 people there? And then they'd show the crowd and there was like 10, maybe 15 that they could actually allow in.
Yeah.
So the love and the support from the faithful was tremendous. And then as things started picking up, watching the talent pick it up, as the crowd started getting larger, as the show started getting more meaningful, watching the younger talent that we were told just graduated, watching them grow and acclimate to this main roster situation, watching guys like we bring it back to Owen Easton and David Drake and Brumach and even Lilith Grimm, and we watch them coming up and just getting so much better so quickly that very quietly there was another group that just came out not long ago with Kendrick. That's what I like to do. I like to, maybe it's the dad in me, I don't know, but my kids are growing up and they're now both almost teenagers, so I'm watching that like change of life as they're getting older. I like seeing the ones that came out very green, very new, and watching them find their own footing and their own way and finding their own place, their niche in where they belong and how they're doing it. That's what I enjoy. I'm maybe, like I said, that's the dad in me watching them grow up. Oh, they're so cute. They're growing up. But that's what I enjoy. And I also enjoy just really good wrestling, man. Like, I get the story and the sometimes a story is overtold with too many promos. One thing Rocky Mountain Pro Superstars do is they tell a great story in the ring. And I throw that to people like Bruce Wayne's. Echo, especially, okay? Echo, Damon, they tell some of the best stories in the ring that I've seen in a very, very long time. And it's only a matter of time before other people are going to see this too. That's what I really like. The story mixed in with the athletic ability, coupled with the people who are watching it and respect it. Not the joke is in the crowd going, yeah. Yay, wrestling, and all the kids that come and troll it and stuff. Yeah. Stay home.
Yeah.
Stay
home. Yeah, the people that are like, twist is, you know, and things of that nature, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, it's stupid because that guy got, what, like 18 billion views? Where, twist him in the blue, all that stuff. And that guy was just a drunk joker at a show. Don't get me wrong, there's a place for hecklers and stuff like that, but when those people start becoming louder than the real fans is when we have a problem.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in Rocky Mountain Pro, and that's what I like. That's what I like. The crowd is into it. They respect what they're watching. They do yell at the heels, and the heels give it right back to them. And it's good interaction. It's good banter. I like it. It really, no pun intended here, but it's literally right up the Masshole's alley. I really, really enjoy every time we watch the show. Ignition, Charged. I wish more of the house shows, like at Romero's and things, were live streamed. I wish I could watch more of it. You know, I really dig it. And I wish I didn't live like 2,500 miles away, to be completely honest. To be completely honest.
Yeah, yeah, so true. You know, and so you kind of mentioned it too. So you're getting involved in, you know, getting inside the ring, inside the ropes, training as a ref. What was the decision to give that a go?
Oh, my God. Okay, so last year is a little peek behind the curtain. Last year, all the dudes and I, we came out. We were a part of Milestone 11 in the Colorado Cup. The night before, we went and met a few of the guys that were on the pot, like Echo and Atiba, and we met a few of the guys, and they let us get into the practice ring where, you know, people were just kind of brushing up on things and doing roles and stuff, and they allowed us to get in. I had never been in a wrestling ring up till that point, and something happened in my belly. I can't put into words. Something about it just felt comfortable. It's weird when you, if you play a game and you're so used to being on that court. Well, I had never been in a ring before. And when I stepped through the ropes, something felt comfortable about it. Now, we went through everything that we did, and Damon Ace completely annihilated my life the next day at Colorado Cup, and I get it. But something happened when we left a couple days later. The bug did not go away. Now, I'm not a large man. I am 5'8". I weigh 170 pounds. I'm not a big dude. I'm a pretty average size guy. But compared to some of the size of men and women that we've seen in wrestling,
yeah,
I'm a very small individual compared to 90%. So I came back, and it just happened to be that a very good buddy of mine that in high school that I played football and baseball with and stuff runs his own training school locally here in Massachusetts in Wakefield, like I was talking about a little while ago. Place is called the Belltime Club. It's very, very, like I said, grassroots. It's an old creaky ring. It's in this modular building that was probably built in like 20 minutes, you know, but it's training a lot of the guys that maybe have felt and girls who felt as though that they might not be good enough or big enough or whatnot. It's a place where a lot of us came to get some confidence and get better.
Mm.
And he offered that moment to me. And when I came there, I'm like, listen, I'm also pushing 40. I've heard of something called a bump card, and I don't think I have a bump card at this point in time. I don't think you could start at 40 and have a bump card, which is basically the amount of times you can get hit before you don't get back up. And I don't want to start punching bumps on that card, even though Damon took care of bump one for me last year.
Yeah.
So I decided that it might be fun to become a referee and to learn that aspect of the game. And for the last 6 months, the guys down in there have been training me very well, teaching me about all the different things. I learned a lot recently on the Talk is Jericho podcast of when Marty Elias mm-hmm. was on the podcast. And that was, if anybody, wrestler, referee, anybody should go listen to that. It was absolutely amazing. All the things that he talks about learning how to do as a referee is all true. And I've looked at it differently since then. I know it was only a couple of weeks ago that it came out, but even my coach had noticed that I've made a lot of improvements because I listened to a lot of what he said, and I tried to put that into practice while I was at training. And it's been coming along very, very well. I'm having an absolute blast doing it. My wife has been, Mrs. Pins has been amazingly supportive of me doing it. I thought she was going to look at me when I first said this, and she's going to go, "You're out of your mind. What are you doing?" She looked at me and said, "Well, where's the school? Is it that far away?" I said, "No." She goes, "Go. What's wrong with you?" I love this woman. Ladies and gentlemen, I love this woman. Okay. but yeah, no, it's been phenomenal. 3 nights a week that I've been going and training, and I'm going to be ready. Should I be called upon going out there for the week? I didn't do it so that I could have something to do. I did it so that I could get this out.
Right. Well,
this drive in my belly. I just wanted to get it out.
Well, they'd say that, and I hear it from everybody. That's one of the first things you learn when you get training in the wrestling business is you need to always be ready. And I put that on the Twitter too, because there was a discussion that President Danger Dean put out that he was just got in the ring to kind of get a little workout and stuff like that. And I told I think it was Albuquerque girl that baby girl that was in, and I said, "Hey, you know what? The way things are going in Rocky Mountain Pro right now, the president needs to be ready if any, you know, stuff happens and everything goes down."
You just never know, and it helps to know what you're doing. And last year's Colorado Cup taught me that. I kind of figured I was going to get in there and just kind of have a fight with Damon. I knew I was at a disadvantage, but he was going to know I was there. When I got in there, I realized, wow, this is different. I really wish I knew a little bit more of how to get things done. Now, I did get an elimination. Everybody talks about how Dean, about how Damon just destroyed me. I eliminated Dean Fleming out of there. Maybe it was out of sheer luck or desperation. I'm going to tell you all right now, it was a little bit of both, because that was Dean Fleming coming yelling and running at me.
Yeah.
I was trying to get out of his way. But when Damon Ace came to the ring, it got very, very real. And I wish I knew more then. I know a lot more than I did. And I have, in an IRL level, okay, this is Mark, not Marky Pins. I respect anybody who gets between those ropes. Now that I know what I know, and I still don't even, I've scratched the surface of it.
Yeah.
I respect everybody so much more for what they put their bodies through and what they have to learn how to do this to just to get to a point where you can go out there, defend yourself, and actually win matches. It is not as easy as everybody thinks it is. I thought it was. I was horribly mistaken.
Yeah.
The amount of respect that I have for who gets in the ring right now is absolutely amazing, because I'm doing it. And doing it gives you that inside level of, wow, there's a lot more than you thought there was. And there really, really is. So everybody who gets in between those ropes, the masshole's hat is absolutely off to you.
Yeah, yeah, so true. So we got Milestone 12 happening as of this recording just under a little under a week.
Yeah. Away.
What are you looking forward to for Milestone 12? You guys are going to be in attendance, but what is Marky Pins looking forward to?
You know, last year the bar was set so very, very high. We got the chance to go out there last year for Colorado Cup and Milestone 11, and we were treated to an absolute gem of a show. Two shows, actually, to be completely honest with you. Yeah. This year, I don't know if it's anybody else, but to me, the flavor of Milestone 12 this year is significantly more personal than last year. Between Curtis Cole and Mercury Yaden 2, basically this is the second time that we're going to get an angry Curtis versus an angry Yaden.
Yeah.
Because when we saw that, I believe it was at Never Broken last year. Yes.
I think it Never Broken last year. Yeah. Because this has been boiling for a while.
It really has. We thought things got better, and then things took a horrible turn for the worst once Marty Kasaus got involved with Curtis Cole and won Preston Skidmore.
Yeah.
We see how high to a boiling point this feud is going at this moment in time. And then the nuclear bomb that is Damon and Balaam. My goodness, how much more personal can this thing get? I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. Stephen Ashburn came out and made it personal to everybody that he's looking for his challenge and only the best are going to come up. Atiba answering that challenge. The match between, you talk about personal, Atiba and Severino last year, that last man standing match.
Yeah.
That was boiling blood feud last year. So now we're going to see, maybe not to that level with him and Ashburn this year, but my goodness, if there is not going to be a lot of personal gripe and beef being settled in the middle of that ring this year. That's the theme to me, is this year Milestone is extremely personal to so many more people that it's going to be interesting to see if people can keep their composures about themselves, not lose that focus that got them to Milestone in the first place, and actually go out and get the job done. That's going to be really important. And plus, I just love really good wrestling. I love wrestling. I love the stories that are told. And like I said before, Rocky Mountain Pro tells supreme stories, and I don't think Milestone 12 would be any letdown in that regard whatsoever.
Yeah. And speaking of wrestling, let me throw this at you.
Yes.
Mercury Yaden versus Curtis Cole. That right there could be your wrestling match, because think of all the experience that Yaden has, and then Curtis with everything that he can do, and he's got quite a few years under his belt too.
True.
And it's like, has Yaden taught everything to Curtis that he knows, or is he still got that proverbial student versus the master where I haven't showed you everything? I still got some tricks.
I was just, when you started talking about that, that's what I was going to go into. Hey, no magician shows his apprentice every trick he knows. There's always that couple that he'll hold back. I think that match really does need to stay a wrestling match. If that match breaks down into a fight, we could end up seeing what we saw the other year at Never Broken, where there was no winner. There has to be a winner in this. One of these two men has to find out who's better than the other one. Each one will tell you that it is them who is better. This match cannot break down into some fight that allows a disqualification or something dumb. Somebody goes for a chair or a kendo stick or something, or a trash can. Yeah. This match needs to have an ending. And I think that could be a little bit of where some of this fire from Curtis Cole came from, that could have actually ignited this whole spark of getting back at Yaden for his title opportunity, was the fact that nobody did win that match last year at Never Broken. It went to, I think it was a 15 or a 20 minute draw. So that is a very interesting element that might be forgotten on all this. Everybody might just be thinking that it's Marty Kassel's. There's still a lot more personal involved here than just Marty stealing, or maybe not stealing, but quote unquote manipulating the circumstances and getting that number one contender match. But that match really needs to stay a wrestling match. I think Damon and Balaam is going to be the fight of the night. That's going to be just a fight. But Curtis and Yaden tried that last time. They tried a fight, and nobody outfought each other. One needs to out-wrestle the other one. And you're right, with two competitors that have been in the game that long and have as full of XP bars as they have, it's literally, in my opinion, going to come down to who knows the last trick. Who didn't teach the other the last trick? Let's not forget, they're both black shirts. They're both coaches. They both are at the pinnacle of what they do. Who didn't teach the other that one last trick, that one last move? That's what it's going to come down to, I firmly believe. One mistake, one in the wrong position, one little thing. These two guys are matched up so well together. That match is going to absolutely, you talk about an emotional roller coaster of a match, there's going to be your emotional roller coaster.
Yeah. I sure hope that this is the match before a little bit of an intermission, because I think the fans in attendance and the fans watching on Fight TV are going to need a little bit of a breather to calm down, get a little bit of a drink of water or something before we need to reset to the next match.
After that, people are definitely going to need to go outside, get some air while they clear all the tension out of the room that's floating in the air right there. Everybody's going to need fresh air or a smoke or something, because that is going to absolutely blow the roof off the joint. Look, there's a few matches that are going to be happening at Milestone that are going to absolutely blow the roof off the joint. I really hope they reinforce the lighting and the structural nature of the roof, because they're going to have to.
Yeah. So another thing that's happening at Milestone Weekend, Colorado Cup is now a part of Milestone. It's going to be before the show. So listeners,
yeah, very if you're interesting about that.
Listen to this, of course, get there early, watch it. Any things that you're looking for in the Colorado Cup? And are there any people that you'd like to maybe hope to see make their way into the Cup? Some, you know, surprises that you would mark out for?
There are more than a few. When we talk about Rocky Mountain Pro talent, there's a few that you really should keep your eye on, because they've been hot and doing well lately. Zamore is somebody you're really going to have to keep an eye on. I don't have the lineup of who's in the Colorado Cup. I really don't know, but I'm just kind of speculating who's been doing well and who's deserved a spot. Zamore is going to be one you're really going to have to watch out for, especially with Bellflower outside, Bud Bellflower. Echo is another one that you really need to keep your eye on. He knows how to last. He lasted a long time in that Lucky 13 Battle Royal the other night on Charged.
Yeah.
So being one of the smaller guys isn't always a disadvantage. Sometimes you can keep yourself in an area and keep yourself in there. Kind of wiry. Hang on to them ropes. Keep yourself in it. My pick to honestly win, if I was picking an R&P talent, would be Remy D. I don't know who has had a hotter altogether 2022 than Remy D. Brumach is very close. Brumach, you talk about an emotional year for somebody with Legion going away and then him meeting Navajo Warrior. He went from the depths of despair to now he is riding high on this confidence wave of the Buffalo that is Navajo Warrior and Brumach, man. All that confidence is now inside of him, and it shows. So Brumach, Remy D, I do think, has a little bit of an edge on him, but we've also seen some talent come out of other places. One guy I am really, really high on, actually there's two, and they happen to be tag team partners. I don't know if they're going to be there, but we've seen them quite a bit on Charged and Ignition. Two guys that come from Texas, Ryan Justice and Jastin Taylor.
The living proof, yeah.
I am extremely high on Jastin Taylor. He is such a good match. A while back, he had that at Peak. He had the title match against Bossy and took Boss to the limit, man, for a solid 15 to 20 minutes. Guy can go. And his tag team partner, who's also done singles competition here in Rocky Mountain Pro, Ryan Justice, has also shown up and shown out to a lot of other people that these two guys got the goods.
Yeah.
So if there were two guys coming in from out of town, those would be two guys that I would look at and say, hey, don't take these guys lightly whatsoever. But firmly all the way down in the mass hole's belly right here, Remy D is my guy.
Yeah.
Remy D is the person who I think is going to take this opportunity, because all he has done all year long is take opportunities and run all the way around the bases and score. It's all he has done, not only being the most camera-friendly, ooze charisma, like they have to clean the ring when he's done because there's puddles of it that he leaves in the ring of charisma and everything that he brings. I really think it's his year. It's his time coming up very, very soon. With everybody saw what he did at the Grand Prix earlier this year on Ignition. I don't think he is done turning heads and making waves at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. What about, so, but do you have any, I know you haven't watched Rocky Mountain Pro as long as myself and, you know, a few others, things
true.
Like that. Do you,
yes.
You know, always with these type of rumble type matches, I mean, I guess that's the best way to explain it. You don't know who the surprise entrants are, but do you have any, you know, thoughts of maybe people you'd like to see from maybe Rocky Mountain Pro's history, their past or anything like that?
You know, it'd be really cool if it was possible if Dozer could come back.
Ooh.
and make an appearance. I know that's not really allowed in WWE too much, but if he was to come back, Otis Dozovich, if he could come back and make an appearance, I don't doubt that we're going to see a Derek Stone sighting. I think that's very, very possible, knowing how long he's been around. Looking forward to a potential Ronan sighting.
Ooh.
We haven't seen Ronan in a very long time on RMPTV. That would be a pretty cool time to come back and make a comeback. There's a lot. But like I said, we're not as acclimated to the years past. Like, we also haven't seen Big Filth. We haven't seen Lipto. We haven't seen a lot of people in a long time. So things change.
Yeah.
Time heals wounds, if that's the case. But I like... Even though that, you know, people call us who are involved in the industry, they call us marks or whatever. I still enjoy being the guy in the crowd, not knowing what's coming.
Yeah.
And being able to scream, cheer, or boo at my own leisure. Like, I enjoy that. Not knowing what's coming here or there. You know, sometimes it's good to know a little bit, but there's a few. Abaddon would be a pissa entry to come back. You just never know if she came back into and had a Colorado Cup moment. God, I'd believe that she'd come back and win the Colorado Cup.
She could. Sake.
Absolutely. But no, it'll just be a hell of a time because everybody loves a good Royal Rumble match. It's you ask anybody what some of their favorite matches of all time, not like individual matches, but like match types.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will say like steel cage because of the old school of it. Hell in the Cell because of the danger of it. A good old-fashioned Royal Rumble. I don't know anybody that says, I don't really like Royal Rumbles. I don't think I ever met anybody that did that. So, because it is part of the surprise and the shock. You never know who's coming. It's a really good time. And plus, I'm a little partial because I was actually in a Royal Rumble. I was in a Colorado Cup last year. So,
yeah.
It's kind of... And that was the first time I was ever in a match. And I was in, my favorite match, in a Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So, it's very, very cool. I will not be in the Rumble this year. Thankfully, Damon can't touch me this year. So... Ha ha, that's not happening.
Yeah.
Sorry to disappoint you, big guy, but no, I'm going to be there. I'll be in the crowd looking forward to, actually, I might kind of pitch maybe if I could ref the Colorado Cup. That would be fun.
Yeah.
I would like to do that.
You could, people get eliminated, you could say, get the heck out. You're
gotta
done.
Tell them, hey, got to go to the back. Sorry, get out of here. I can yell at Damon. Damon, you're out. Get out of here, bud.
That'll be something. Yeah.
Go away. Get that on camera.
You touch me, not only are you out of the cup, you're probably going to get a fine, too.
Oh, it's over, right? And that fine's going to pay for my gas driving all the way home from Colorado. Thank you, sir.
Well, Marky, I think that might be a fantastic exclamation point to put on this. Before I do let you go, the listeners of RMP Radio, if they want to follow you out there on the interwebs, the social medias, everything that you do here with Rocky Mount Pro, Johnny Deathdrop, and so on, where could they do that?
So I'm not extremely active on social media. I'm not a boomer, but I don't do a lot of it on there. But if you want to get a hold of me on Twitter and Instagram, it's Maki Pins, M-A-H, Boston style, remember, M-A-H-K-Y-P-I-N-Z on the end. Hit me up. I have a Facebook as well. I don't do a lot of Twitter, but, you know, if you get a question or if you want to see the bowling alley, my bowling alley also has an Instagram, Riverwalk Lanes. So, but like I said, I'm not too active on it, but we do the Twitch thing here and there. It's more fun. I enjoy being in front of the camera than doing a lot of the typing. I like to be on camera more than I like to be posting.
Right. I totally get that. Everybody has their preference.
I've always been that way. Even when I was younger, I always did a lot of plays and school dramas and things like that. So I don't mind being in front of the people, but when I'm in front of the keyboard, that's when I'm like, nah, it's just words without emotion. I don't want to type this.
Oh, fantastic. Well, once again, thank you for coming on. I'll be seeing
you. Mr. Fourth Row, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
All right. And like I said, we'll see you here at Rocky Mount Pro at Milestone in a week and say hi to you and catch up with all the dudes and everything like that.
We'll actually be there a little earlier. We'll be getting into Colorado very early Tuesday morning. So we will be there for Ignition.
Oh, there you go.
I will be there for the Ignition taping, so that will be wicked fun. Wicked fun.
Once again, a big, huge thank you to Marky Pins for coming on to this edition of RMP Radio and introducing himself to our listeners. Of course, a lot of the listeners also know him from the Dudes and Belts chatcast at twitch.tv/JohnnyDeathDrop. All right, well, so before we get out of here, let's pay some bills like they used to say back in the day. Want to get some merchandise of your favorite Rocky Mountain Pro superstars? A few different ways to do that. The first is to head over to rmpwrestling.com. Click on that merch link, or if you're in the Amazon.com or the Amazon app, do a search for Rocky Mountain Pro. You'll be presented with a few choices, different choices from there. And then, as always, hit up the merch table. Come say hi to me, I guess. And you'll see those exclusive in-show only items that you can get there. Now, speaking of shows, of course, if you want to see all the events and shows that we got coming up, once again, rmpwrestling.com. Click on that events link and you'll see all the events that we got coming up in the near future, as well as a kind of a general list of the whole calendar for that year. Now, as of the time of this recording right now and the release of this episode, we've got a few fantastic events left for the Milestone Weekend. The Milestone Weekend is actually, in my opinion, starting on Thursday with Top Taco over in Westminster, Colorado. The best place to do that is just do a search through either Facebook or your Google machine for Top Taco over in Westminster. That's where Rocky Mountain Pro will be at on Thursday evening. Get those tickets from their website and come say hi to us there. Then, of course, Milestone 12, Friday the 24th. Get your tickets, rmpwrestling.com. If you cannot attend in person, it is going to be on Fight TV, and at the time of this recording, it's ready for you to order. So if you even are going to be attending, might as well go ahead and purchase as well, so you can then see yourself later at the event. That's what I like to do. I like to purchase those events on Fight TV, and of course, with Fight TV, you get to purchase those and watch them back as many times as you would like. It is great to have your wrestling and combat sports collection on Fight TV, because Rocky Mountain Pro Milestone 12 It is What's on Fight this Friday. Then on Saturday, we're going to see the fallout from Milestone 12 with the next set of charged recordings. There are two sessions to choose from, one that starts in the early afternoon, one later in the later afternoon. Get that information. Tickets, once again, rmpwrestling.com. Click on that events link. And then, of course, additionally, with all these events, like I keep telling you, follow your favorite Rocky Mountain Pro Superstars commentating team, the podcaster / merch guy / ticket guy. We always put out some links there. You can always be reminded, and you can purchase the tickets right there from those links, and that would be greatly appreciated when you do so. Now, from event to event, you want to still stay up with everything Rocky Mountain Pro. The events you can watch at twitch.tv/RockyMountainPro. Also on our youtube.com/RockyMountainPro. We would appreciate if you give that thumbs up to every single episode of Charged. And write us a comment. Tell us what you think on that particular episode. And if it's the best comment that we like, you may be highlighted from the show. Now, follow us out there on the interwebs. Everything does stem from the website at rmpwrestling.com. And then on the socials of the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram of the Rocky MTN Pro. As always, I'm going to phonetically spell that back to you, for that is the Rocky Mike Tango November Pro. Thank you for listening to RMP Radio, where pro wrestling is elevated.